Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 68, Shop and Chop. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Hello.
And once again, we are back to talk about the latest happenings in the world of Nintendo. Our big topic this week is going to be our least favorite NES games. That's right, our least favorite NES games. But before we get to that, let's kick it off with some news. Specifically, let's start with something that is sort of boring, Nintendo's latest fiscal results from Q2 fiscal year 2016.
And that didn't go so well, did it?
No, it didn't. It didn't go so well. It's kind of a boring topic.
Yeah.
We'll cover it very, very briefly. And by that, I mean to say sales are down, mm-hmm. hardware is down, software is down, amiibo sales are down.
Yeah.
They lost like... I guess it's not a staggering amount for a large business, but they lost $7.79 million for the mm-hmm, quarter. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I lost $7.79 million, I'd be really concerned personally. But if it's Nintendo, it's not really that bad.
Yeah, no, that's
especially for second quarter.
Yeah.
Where they really didn't really have much in the way of new releases. It was kind of really extraordinarily terrible time for them.
Yeah, yeah.
There was, was there anything on Wii U, there was like one game maybe or something. I don't know. It was all terrible looking. Not very many games.
No.
We've got the NES Classic coming out.
Yeah, that's going to be big.
We've got Pokemon coming out.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, there aren't as many games in the holiday quarter as there usually are.
Mm-hmm.
Things are really calm this year. But still, things should be picking up for them a little bit.
Yeah, and Mario on iOS is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess these results did have, some stuff from Pokemon Go, but as we know, that's, not really Nintendo's as much as it mm-hmm. is Niantic's
yeah.
and the Pokemon companies.
Although, their Pokemon sales were really good on the 3DS, and sold a bunch of 3DSs. A ton. It's just surprising that that handheld is doing as well as it is 5 years on, so that's pretty promising. Oh, and Kirby Planet Robobot has sold 1 million copies. Were you surprised by that? Yeah.
I didn't even notice it. That's cool. That's great to hear.
That's a big deal. 1 million, that's big for a little handheld game like that. Mm-hmm. I bought one.
That's pretty nice. Yep, me too. Haven't finished it yet. Got to go back to
it
because it's really, really good.
Well, yeah. I'm a completionist, and that's a bad thing in a game like that where you're like, oh man, I got halfway through the level and I missed the secret piece, and I have to go back and find it.
Yep, totally. Now, I was expecting that out of this financial report, there would be a little bit of Nintendo Switch news. And unfortunately, the little bit of Nintendo Switch news is that there really isn't going to be any news.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that they're not ready to tell us the price. They're not ready to tell us the specs. They're not ready to tell us the launch lineup. But they will be telling us all of this stuff in a online live stream presentation on January 12th.
Yeah.
So mark your calendars. January 12th, that's the big day. But unfortunately, nothing as far as the rest of 2016 goes.
Yeah, it makes me think they're not even in production yet with this thing. And
I wonder.
Certain details aren't even figured out yet. Like, is it a touchscreen? We're not saying.
Well, I'm sure they know. But
I don't know if they know. I don't know if they know. Maybe they're trying
to
get it.
Know.
I don't think they do at this.
And we're only like 6 months out, or is it 5 months out?
Five months
out from release. This thing's got to be.
You can
pretty
build
much
it.
All...
You can build it as if it's not a touchscreen, and then you can get a supplier for cheap touchscreens, and then you can code some software to make it be a touchscreen. You can do software updates and give that, add functionality to the OS. I don't know. It feels like it's really late in the game to make those kind of decisions, but
I think it's way too late for them to still be making up their minds about things like that. And like I said last week, they're one of the pioneers when it comes to touchscreen gaming, so I fully expect it to be in this system.
Then why don't they say? Why don't they say?
I don't know. Maybe because they want to be Apple? I mean, probably if it were up to them, they would announce this thing and have it come out 2 weeks later like Apple does with all its stuff.
Yeah, but if Apple shows you the goods, you that day know in millimeters how big the screen is, how big or the absence of a headphone jack or stuff like that. That's the thing that Nintendo's not so good at. Like, don't show me a video that's way more than a teaser and then not expect me to say, well, is it a touchscreen? How big is it? And a lot of, like,
I would like to know more about the size.
Online sleuths have done interesting measurements using the the thumbstick as a guide, because those are usually around like 19 millimeters in diameter. Mm-hmm. So they use that, and they figured out that the touchscreen is about 6 inches diagonal.
Yeah, I've seen the estimates, but you know, until Nintendo comes out and actually confirms any of this stuff, we don't know it's true. And that goes for the region-free functionality we were talking about last week. Last week we mentioned twice that this thing was supposedly region-free, and it turns out that has not been confirmed by Nintendo. Unfortunately, it's still just a rumor at this point. Hopefully it's true. You know, the rumors say it's true, but we got to hold off and wait.
Yeah, at this point, I think region-locked is going to work against them for sure. You know, a lot of people travel these days, and there are a lot of people whose, you know, first language isn't necessarily the place they live. And so that's all a big part of this issue where, you know, I can't play the game in Spanish because I'm not in the Spanish language region. And that's ridiculous, you know, so that's not me, obviously, but there are some people.
Yeah, I mean, my feeling has always been that it's been more of a way to try to prevent some sort of piracy than to really lock out other regions.
Yeah.
And so, you know, hopefully they've still found a way to, you know, try to prevent piracy without, you know, doing a ridiculous region lock.
Yeah.
So keep my fingers crossed for that.
Well, it's funny that Microsoft and PlayStation and Sony, I mean, have really, it feels like they've made their systems relatively bulletproof with regards to piracy, whereas Nintendo tries really hard at it and fails miserably every time out. The Wii U's been unlocked, the 3DS is pretty much hackable, except for, you know, recently. But it's funny that they go to these lengths to make it not hackable, and yet people still find a way.
Yeah, that is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to see Nintendo...
No, I don't want them to lose money.
Losing money over piracy.
Yeah.
Don't pirate stuff, kids. Piracy's bad. So yeah, any other further thoughts on the Switch now that we're a week out?
No, I'm still excited for it. I know investors aren't necessarily, and I don't think
the
market is very excited for it, but...
Yeah, investors don't know what they're talking about. These are the same guys who, you know, suddenly they saw Nintendo stock skyrocket when somebody else released...
Yep.
Pokemon Go. Then when they found it wasn't a Nintendo product, then some of their stocks tanked. Yep, and, you know, the market is ridiculous.
The market is ridiculous.
And it happens with Apple all the time, too. You know, they show off a new product. It's not some mind-blowing new thing. And then the thing releases it, and the stocks tank again. And meanwhile, sales go through the roof and it sets a new record.
Yep.
So if there's one thing I've learned from looking at, you know, the financial trends in the tech industry, it's that they're total nonsense.
You know, online, it seems like everyone's excited for this thing. I think a lot of people who are going to be reticent to buy a new $400 PlayStation or Xbox just because they decided, let's give these systems a little bump, those are the people that might come over and get a Switch instead of getting a second PlayStation 4 or a second Xbox One.
That definitely could be. Yeah, I'm still at the same place I am last week, where I'm excited about it. And, you know, the main thing for me is it is a new Nintendo system. Nintendo pretty much always delivers. We still have a lot to learn as far as what kind of gimmicks and technology are in it. But just knowing that Nintendo always delivers the games, you know, I think that's plenty of reason to be excited, even if we have to wait until next year for the details.
That's true.
Anyway, let's move along from that to some recent game impressions. And by that, I mean this week's release of Corpse Party on the Nintendo 3DS.
Did you get to play this? I know you had some issues actually getting it.
Yes, I did finally get my hands on the game. It's being released in both physical and digital. There is a deluxe physical edition that comes with two figurines and a soundtrack, and that sells for $50.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just opt for the game itself for $30 and get it through the eShop. And I was planning to get the $50 deluxe version through Amazon. And allegedly, it was delivered to my place yesterday. The only problem is it never actually got here. So I did not think I was going to get it in time for this week's show. But, It's a freaky ass horror game. We're just a week away from Halloween. And I'm like, you know what? I got to play this, you know, in time to talk about it before the big holiday. So I went ahead, contacted their PR company, and was able to get my hands on the digital version. And was able to play a few hours of that before we started recording.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool for them to do that for you. That's really neat.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, I'm familiar with the game. It came out on the PSP a few years back, and I played through that, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. Although, enjoy is kind of a weird word when you're talking about a game of this nature, which is built to be disgusting and totally freak you out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard to tell that at first, because when you just look at a screenshot of the game, you think, oh, this looks kind of cute and maybe even a little bit babyish, because it's got this whole, you know, cutesy, super deformed sprites thing going on. They're very adorable, and it's very misleading. The intro is kind of cute and a little bit silly, but then after that, things just get weird. Things get out of control. And you end up playing this game that is essentially a top-down adventure. You know, sort of like an old-school RPG, only there's no combat. You're just walking around, exploring, you know, getting a couple items to help you out. And you're trapped in this dilapidated school. And, you know, even though it has this very sort of cute visual look, you're still walking around this decayed school full of dead bodies and these weird ghosts. They're like, you know, blue dead children with missing body parts. And there's like, you know, buckets of bodily fluids and like a cabinet full of disgusting black hair. And you read these details about these grisly murders and, you know, mutilations and like, oh, here's instructions on how to cut somebody's tongue out. And there's also, you know, a little bit of perviness going on, too.
Sounds like anime to me.
Yeah, yeah, it's very, very anime influenced, I suppose. It's got a very, very distinctive anime look. And, you know, it's very, very Japanese. It's got tons of voice acting, but it's all in Japanese. There's no English dub. But it works really, really well. In fact, the audio is one of the best things about the game. I really don't know if it would work quite as well in English. I mean, normally I tend to like having things in my native tongue, but in this case, when it's a lot of people sounding horrified and, you know, making disturbed screaming noises and things like that, A, it's kind of universal, and B, I'm afraid it would sound really cheesy in English. So I think it ends up working really well. Plus, the whole thing is set in Japan, so it makes sense to everybody still speaking Japanese. The music is very unsettling as well and adds to this whole feeling of unease and sort of hopelessness and just this whole fear of the unknown. And from a gameplay perspective, I guess it can be maybe a little bit frustrating because there are, you know, triggers that aren't really obvious, you know, like triggering, you know, events. Sometimes just backtracking or wandering around, you're not sure what's going on. And then, you know, something suddenly changes. And that will freak you out. Despite the cuteness, something is going to sort of appear that wasn't there, and that might freak you out. And like I said, there's no combat. All you can really do most of the time is run away from a bad guy if it appears. You know, run away or die. It really does a great job of delivering horror. It also does a great job of delivering characterization. So you get to know these characters a little bit and get a good feel for them and kind of like, hey, I like these characters. And then they're going to have some, you know, brutal way of being taken from you one way or another, probably.
Mm-hmm. Is it a puzzle-solving kind of adventure game? How do you progress?
It's just by exploring this top-down area. Yeah, usually you do have to find maybe an item to proceed. Early on in the game, it's like, oh, well, I can't get through this hallway because it's collapsed. You have to go find a board, and you know, put mm-hmm. this board down, then you have a platform to move over. And you might have to do that a few times. But then sometimes things just seem really arbitrary. Like you go into a room and suddenly it's locked and it's like, well, how do I get out of here? I try reading a few things or, you know, talking to a weird, you know, specter that's there, or maybe I'm just walking up and down the room a few times. And that's the key to unlocking that door and getting out. And like I said, so it's not necessarily clear, but yeah, I would characterize it as an adventure game, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, puzzles, I wouldn't really call them puzzles, but I guess they kind of are as far as, you know, object-oriented puzzles. But, you know, it's not like, you know, Monkey Island or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly not like, you know, Professor Layton. You do use objects in your inventory to get past some places where you might get stuck otherwise, but I'm almost hesitant to call them puzzles.
It doesn't look like it's in 3D. Is there any 3D in this game?
There's only a little bit of 3D. Most of the gameplay is not in 3D, as you said. Some of the cutscenes are, I guess most of the cutscenes are. They have a little bit of 3D going on, but yeah, most of the regular gameplay is unfortunately not in 3D. I think that's a missed opportunity. You know, because you're looking at the top-down perspective, I think they could have easily added some sort of sense of depth to these rooms you're going through, so I feel like they should have tried doing that. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe it didn't work out. But yeah, that is a bit of a missed opportunity for them. Mm. I've only had a chance to play about, you know, 2 hours with this one. That was enough to get me to the end of the first chapter, you know, enough to give me a bit of a refresher. I know there's, you know, lots more to come. There are some new chapters that I have not unlocked yet, but I did get to play one back at E3, so I was able to experience that a little bit, and I'm looking forward to experiencing that even more, because yeah, some of these are definitely brand new just for the 3DS version. Some of them are not, but I'm definitely looking forward to experiencing all that new content and checking that all out.
And I see there's a Corpse Party 2 already on, is that on Vita or is that the PC?
It does have two sequels. I think one was on PSP and the other one was on Vita. Maybe it's also on PC. I'm not sure. But yeah, this is the original. So this is the best place to start.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, they keep, you know, reissuing it, adding new enhancements, new features. This is probably the best looking version. And like I said, there are some new side chapters going on. So it's a great way to introduce yourself to the series. And if you are already a fan like I am, because there is new stuff, it could also be worthwhile as well. Like I said, I haven't played enough to really say one way or the other if it's, you know, really worth buying all over again. But I am certainly having a good time.
Cool.
You know, in a horrifying way.
Yeah, it looks cute. But yeah, I'm looking at the screenshots. It looks bloody as heck. Yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly not for everybody. Beware that M rating. If you're looking for like something to scare your pooper off, you know, this will probably do the trick.
Yeah.
But moving along from something that is grotesque and horrifying to something that's maybe just a little bit mildly spooky. There is a game that came out on the Wii U eShop probably, boy, it's been probably a couple months, maybe 2 months by now. The game is called Shadow Archer. And in full disclosure, this game is made by someone that I would consider a friend of the show, the guys over at Operation Power Up, who have been kind enough to you know, make these faux covers for us week after week. So I did want to just get that out there.
So they were kind enough to get us a download code.
Yes, and they did provide us a code so we could check out the game as well. But what really matters is, you know, is it a good game or not? Is it worth checking out? I wasn't sure what to think at first. I downloaded the game, I fired it up, and this game, it's very, very old school.
It is. It's very much like an arcade game. Like a
like a pre-NES arcade game. And it starts off really slow. You are this Shadow Archer character, and you're, you know, sort of in a big arena fighting off some spiders, and you know, they're fairly easy. You have limited ammo, but you know, as you kill enemies, you can replenish your ammo because they drop more
arrows. Yeah.
But then the more enemies you kill, the more start spawning, and then you start getting tougher enemies that take more hits, and then you get new types of enemies, and then you get enemies that can only be killed by using special kinds of arrows, and then you get these wizard enemies that are a lot tougher.
Oh my gosh, you got past the spiders? Okay. I'm respect right there. I didn't get that far.
Well, the spiders were still there. The spiders are always there. But then there are
those
you know, like
black blobs that you could only kill with the white arrows.
Yeah, yeah. And then these wizards start showing
up. I didn't get to the wizards. How far after the black blobs did you have to play?
I don't think it was too much further.
I'm impressed because I played for, I don't know, I played for like, I got to say about a half hour. And I couldn't get past the blobs. That's as far as I got. It is not easy, but it is addictive. My gosh. Every time I died, I thought, oh, there's no way my brain is going to hit the start button and play this again. And I played it again. So
yeah, that's the kind of game it is.
It is, it is.
And you're just trying to get a high score. Mm-hmm. And even though it does start out slow and fairly easy, it ramps up pretty quick.
It does.
And it gets pretty intense. And it gets pretty fun.
It's very intense.
It's like, okay, I'm just going to play one more time and see if I can beat that high score.
So this game... And this is not a bad thing, by the way, because I love old Atari and ColecoVision games. This game feels like a top 10 ColecoVision game. Not kidding. So that's a very cool, especially for somebody who likes classic gameplay like this. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. And I definitely think I'm going to go back between longer gameplay sessions to Shadow Archer just because it's very easy to pick it up and play and see how far you can get. It is, you know, it is one of these really throwback type games where you're really trying to get a high score. But yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun.
And it's really, really affordable too. It's only $3 for this
thing. Yeah, $3. And there are a few different power-ups you can get. One, I got a spread arrow. I also got, you know, the white.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
So I was able to shoot like, and it only lasted for like 3 or 4 shots, which I feel like an update could get me a spread arrow gun that would last much longer. So developer, if you're listening. But yeah, the spread gun was a lot of fun. It only lasted for a few shots. It shot, you know, an arrow in a diagonal up, diagonal down, and straight ahead direction. And then I'm thinking when you run out of arrows, it feels like now I just have to kill myself because I've run out of arrows and I can't get more because the enemies drop arrows. So I hit the pause
button. Yeah, that's kind of the game's gimmick. The enemies are unlimited, but the arrows
are
not.
And you think there's no way I'm going to run out of arrows. You start with 100 and every fifth enemy drops like a 10 arrow bucket pack. But once the game gets insane, running back to collect the dropped arrows is not a thing. Like, you're going to get killed.
Yeah, because you're avoiding
other bad guys. Mm-hmm. But I figured out, if you pause the game, and I think if you hit select or if you hit, like, a shoulder button, I forget, but you can sacrifice a heart and get 50 more arrows. So I felt like that was a cool little Easter egg. I didn't see anything online about this, so I don't know if the developer even knows.
Well, there you go. You got some classified information from you, straight from the pros.
Yeah, so... if you run out of arrows, hit the start button, and then I think it's a shoulder button. It might be like the select button, but you can sacrifice a heart and get 50 more arrows. Totally worth it, because hearts are relatively easy to come by. But yeah, fun game. Definitely one that I will go back to. And for $3,
yeah,
if you're a fan of classic arcade games like Robotron or Berserk, this is a game for you.
Yeah, if you like those kind of games, definitely worth the money. Speaking of old school throwbacks, there is a new model of the new Nintendo 3DS XL out there. It is a lime green version. You might be thinking, well, what's retro about that? Well, what's retro about it is it comes bundled with Super Mario World.
What? Wait, say that again? It comes with Super Mario World? That's bizarre.
Yes.
It's bundled with an $8 eShop title. All right, Nintendo, that's bizarre. Yeah,
it's a little bit bizarre. I guess their theory behind it is because the system is green and Yoshi is green. That's sort of how they're tying it together.
Well, they already have a Yoshi 3DS. Oh, come on.
Well, now they got another Yoshi 3DS.
All right.
If you like green, you can go out and get this one on Amazon for $200. It is exclusive to that online retailer.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I think it would have been a lot more enticing if they had made like a Super NES themed new 3DS.
With the colored buttons.
Yeah, totally. Like, that would make me totally jealous. Like, oh man, I need to go buy another one of these.
Honestly,
so I'm kind of glad they haven't done that yet.
If they went and if they made it purple like the North American Super NES...
Oh man.
You may have a buyer.
I would have a big problem because I want that.
Yeah.
I would so want that. But for now, this new bundle's out there. Just thought I would mention that just in case. And it is available now.
Well, they're still selling these things, and all they got to do is change the color, and people will buy another one.
Well, something else that I'm excited about buying, more excited than I am about a lime green new 3DS XL, that is, the Phoenix Wright action figure, the Figma from Japan that we've talked about on previous episodes. It is finally up for pre-order. You can order it from places like Big Bad Toy Store, as well as other import specialists. But yeah, it's finally going to be coming out probably sometime between May and August of next year. The different sites I've been to have all listed different dates. One says May, one says July, one says August. So who knows? It's coming out sometime around then. But the point is, if you are an Ace Attorney fan like I am, I finally have a time frame. I'll be able to get my hands on this sucker.
Yeah.
And of course, it's got multiple faces. It comes with a podium accessory or a desk accessory, so he can stand behind it and slap his hands on. And of course, it does come with the voice bubbles. So far, they've only shown them in Japanese. So, will it end up having English ones? I don't know. But it does have the voice bubbles, so you can put those in their little stands and put them above him and have him saying, Igyari, even if you can't have him saying objection.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I said this before on the show, but if you don't know what a Figma is, it's just an insanely poseable action figure. There are joints all over the place on the thing. So the wrist is poseable, the elbow, the shoulder joints, the knees. So you can put Phoenix Wright in practically any pose you can imagine, which is really neat.
Yeah, the figure's looking really cool. It'll run you a decent amount. It's around, like 65, maybe even 70 bucks. So not exactly cheap, but I'm totally looking forward to it nonetheless. I also got my hands on some other action figures recently. Other action figures that we have talked about on the show, and those are the Contra action figures from Nika. And I saw pictures of these a while ago, and we talked about it on the show, and I was like, okay, well, this seems pretty cool. I never thought there would be Contra action figures in this day and age, and it comes in an NES-style box, and it comes with a lot of cool accessories. Like, you can make it look like there's bullets coming out of their guns. There's even a spread gun accessory where you can stand up like this wedge
ridiculous.
Of bullets.
Yeah.
Comes with a weapon power-up capsule. Also comes with, attachment for the gun just to make it look, a little cooler and fit better into the character's arm. And, so I got these. I was pretty excited. I love Contra. The paint jobs on these, they're sort of, blotchy a little bit, and I think that's intentional.
It is intentional, right? They're trying to aim for that 8-bit color palette.
I think so. I think that's exactly what they're going for.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was excited when I first saw these. I was excited to get my hands on them, and then this realization hit me, and I should have realized this a long time ago, and that is they got the colors reversed.
They reversed the colors
of players 1 and player 2.
Are you saying the blonde guy is supposed to be blue and the brown guy is supposed to be red?
Yes, absolutely.
How did they mess that up? Is that?
I do not know. I mean, if you even look at the NES box art, you can clearly see the red headband on the Rambo guy, who's player 2. And, even though Arnold Schwarzenegger guy, player 1, you can't really tell if that's a blue headband. But anyway, I mean, it's well known that Bill Reiser, player 1, is blue, and the other guy is player 2, and he's red. And somehow, they managed to totally muck this up.
That is really shocking. I wonder how far along they got before they realized it.
I think people told them, in retrospect, I looked into, what people were talking about on message boards and things, and I should have known a long time ago, because lots of people noticed a long time ago when these things were first unveiled, and they complained about it, and they told Nika, hey, you've got the colors wrong. And I guess they didn't care. I don't know. Maybe Konami said that's the way it has to be. Knowing Konami, I think they wouldn't even care. I don't know what the deal is, but yeah, that's how it ended up. I still like them in spite of that, but it seems like a really, really, really dumb mistake, and obviously makes it really hard to recommend with that pretty obnoxious oversight. I'm thinking I might try swapping the heads on mine and repainting the headbands, because that's all it would really take to get it fixed and made better. I guess one of the characters has gloves, so I'm going to have to swap the hands as well. But I would say, hey, these are totally recommended, but then kind of significant oversight there.
Do you think you'll be able to swap the heads?
I think so. I believe they're on ball joints, and it should be pretty easy just to pull them off. I have done it with other figures before. Usually it just requires, you know, putting it under hot water for a little bit, and that softens the plastic enough where you can pull it off mm-hmm. and swap it. The tricky part, I imagine, is going to be getting paint that matches exactly, and then, you know, not letting your paint run over into the character's hair or over their face or something like that.
Yeah.
I guess Bill's face is kind of weird looking, too. He's sort of got this blank expression that's just ever so slightly cross-eyed.
Yeah. You know, I hate to say it, but the paint job on these things, if you look at them, it's so splotchy that I don't think you could mess up the paint job at this point, to be honest.
Well, moving along from collectibles, why don't we answer some listener mail?
Let's do it.
And this first one comes from Joey T. He's got three questions here. The first one, with so many guesses out there for release titles, would you be surprised if Nintendo made a new series or IP for the Switch release? I think it would be fun if they made something like Kid Icarus Uprising and reintroduced an older character like Duck Hunt or Captain Falcon. Obviously, I would not be let down if we could just get 3D Mario, Zelda, Smash, etc. But I would be surprised if we didn't get something unexpected. My answer would be, of course, I want to see a new IP. I think you said that as well, Scott, that, you know, we want to be surprised.
Yeah,
we
want to
see something new.
But I also want a new Metroid game.
Yes. I mean, when you're coming up with ideas for the games you want to see on the system, it's kind of hard to be like, oh, well, I want to see a new Ninja Lords game, because there is no such thing as Ninja Lords yet. So, you know, it's obvious that we're going to harp on, you know, sequels and saying we want a Metro, we want a Zelda, we want a Mario, we want a Pokemon, because this new thing, we don't know what it is yet. But yes, certainly. Yeah. I want to see new stuff. And I think with the success of Splatoon, Nintendo is probably going to be more open to new IPs these days than they have been for a while. I think they might be willing to take a little bit more risk on a character that, you know, hasn't been yet established.
For sure. Especially since Splatoon, if you close your eyes and think about it, how easy would it have been to put Mario and the gang inside of Splatoon?
Yep.
And they didn't, which is great.
Yeah, they considered it, but
I think that IP is, I think the Splatoon IP is spot on, really nailed that culture.
It's spot on.
Yeah. It's spot on. No pun intended.
And you know, as far as, you know, reviving an old IP, you know, he mentions, you know, Duck Hunt or Captain Falcon or something. I'd be down with that also. You know, I mentioned before that I would love to see a game with Captain Falcon as a bounty hunter in some sort of, you know, futuristic open world city type of game.
Okay.
I've also talked about wanting to see maybe a revival of Mach Rider. And, you know, maybe Captain Falcon could be in this Mach Rider game, because it seems very similar. I could easily see F-Zero and Mach Rider being in the same futuristic world.
Really? Mach Rider, the motorcycle game?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Which is a futuristic, post-apocalyptic sort of motorcycle racing game. I can see that fitting into that same world pretty darn well. But, you know, maybe the Mach Rider is just, you know, traveling from place to place before he, you know, gets into a battle and fights the villains or something like that. Of course, my dream revival IP, as I mentioned time and time again, is pro wrestling. I'm going to see the Amazon and Starman in all their polygonal glory. So,
all right. I'm there with you. I have fond memories of that game. Does the motorcycle in Mach Rider transform into a chicken?
Why not? Okay. Sure.
All right. Great.
Let's do it. Chicken Rider.
Oh, Captain Falcon. No, that would be... I got Star Fox on the brain. I'm sorry.
Oh. His name is Captain Falcon. He is not a falcon. He is not a fox. He is a bounty hunter, and he will show us his moves.
Captain Falcon is not a bird person.
He's kind of a big jerk, and that's why I like him.
Wait, why is he a big jerk?
Because he murdered all the Pikmin, man. Do you remember that? And he was like, what? Yeah, what'd I do? Yeah. that's why that guy deserves to be in his own game. As, you know, doing actual bounty hunting stuff and showing his moves, not just being in the car in F-Zero. You know, we got a taste of it in Smash, but I think they could definitely do more with that guy. On to Joey T's second question. Any suggestions for a Nintendo Halloween costume? My friend and I were thinking about Mario and Luigi as Ace Attorneys, Mario and Mario Medical Malpractice Firm. Now, as we're recording this, Halloween is less than a week away. Scott, do you have any suggestions for a video game, a Nintendo-themed costume on this short notice?
I think you could dress as Luigi and drag your vacuum around on your back. I mean, you'd have to mount your vacuum on your back. And I really think to really do it right, you'd need some sort of power source for the thing. So I'm guessing you'll be pulling a gas generator to make your vacuum run, but it'll be worth it. You'll be the only one dressed as Luigi from Luigi's Mansion.
See, I was thinking something, you know, you've only got a week left. What do you have time to actually put together? And that depends, you know. You know, you might want to get a costume that sort of fits. You know, are you male or female? How big are you? There's one costume that'll work no matter what. Shy guy. Go as a shy guy. You know, it's a simple mask. It's a cloak. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easily recognizable. Or you could, you know, you could upgrade to a Sniffit maybe. But I think a shy guy or one of those Mario 2 characters is probably an easy-ish costume to put together. And you know, would still be very identifiable as a Nintendo character. For me, personally, if I were going to dress up as a video game character, you know, I thought, well, maybe I could be Chief Gant from the Phoenix Wright series. Although I don't think I could do his crazy hairdo. You have to buy a lot of hair gel. Probably for any character in Ace Attorney, you'd buy a lot of hair gel.
I like the crossover idea. I like Mario as Ace Attorney. You've got Dr. Mario.
It's a conflict of interest, though, man. I mean, can you be representing yourself like that? I don't know. Or I guess if they're malpractice, then they're sort of going against themselves and their whole pill tossing thing. So, so if you were going to dress up as a game character for Halloween, who would you go as?
I've dressed up as Mario before. When we worked together, a lot of people dressed up as video game characters. And one year I dressed up as Mario, and it was a little bit embarrassing to be on the train riding to work wearing wearing that ridiculous costume. You know, I've always gravitated towards Link, but I know that it's not a popular costume for guys for some reason. A lot of women like to dress up as Link, and guys get like the weird looks when they dress up as Link. I don't like that, but yeah, so I say Mario, but crossed with something, because, you know, Mario's a little too obvious. So, yeah, I'm with you with the Ace Attorney. I think I don't know how you pull that off. Maybe you need a bright green briefcase or something.
All right. So moving on to Joey T's third and final question. Did my ears deceive me, or was there no mention of Super Smash Brothers in the Nintendo 64 retrospective episode? You know, that was not an oversight on our part. Personally, I did not love Smash Brothers on the Nintendo 64. When it first came out, I was not sold on the concept at all. What did you think of the original?
I didn't get into Smash Bros. Until Brawl.
Really?
Yeah.
Brawl, not Melee.
No, not Melee. So I missed out on that whole... basically those whole two generations of consoles.
I thought you loved GameCube.
I went back to GameCube, but it was years later. I missed out.
Yeah, for me personally, I thought the control, the way you moved your character, was just way too squirrely. And so that really took away the enjoyment from me. And it didn't have nearly the depth of content that the later games did. You know, Melee stepped it up so much, made it so much more fun, and that continued with Brawl in the most recent games. Yeah, that first Smash Brothers, I'm sorry to say, I just didn't like it that much. Okay, on to our next letter. This one comes from Alex A. I really enjoyed hearing both of your thoughts on Color Splash, and I agree with everything said for the most part, but I'm a little surprised that Scott didn't talk at all about the things mechanic at all. In Sticker Star, picking up a thing resulted in a thing sticker, which were necessary for solving puzzles and beating bosses. Problem is, there was no indication of when you would need a thing sticker, and if you happened to use it before you needed it, hopefully you remember where the original thing was, as that's the only way you're getting that sticker back. Color Splash has essentially fixed this by having both a Toad that gives you hints as to what thing card you'll need and a Toad that will sell you thing cards after you've found the original. Obviously, I didn't play Sticker Star, so Scott, do you have anything to mention about that?
So
do you agree?
In the Hub Town, you go through a little cave or something. There was a place, this is in Sticker Star, where you could repurchase thing stickers that you blew by accident on things that you didn't mean to blow them on. So you could repurchase without having to go back to the level you found that sticker in.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So that was also not necessarily a huge pain point for me in Sticker Star. I think I'm not a huge, the thing stickers feel like just kind of tacked on, and I'm not a big fan of thing stickers. I avoid using them, especially because
I kind of was hoarding them in Color Splash.
They take too long to play out. And after you've seen the animation once, you don't want to sit through 20 seconds of a tsunami or a giant fan appearing over the horizon. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a fan of the sticker, the giant
not
thing.
Not a fan of the fan.
You know, use them to solve puzzles, but I rarely will use them in battle because, except for when they're necessary to finish off a boss. But yeah, so in Sticker Star, the thing stickers were, if you didn't unlock that area that let you go back and re-get the thing stickers you wasted by accident, you would have to backtrack through a level just to re-get the one, mm-hmm. the fan sticker that you
Yeah, that would be a pain.
So did we answer your question or did I just ramble?
Well, I guess you told him that there actually is a way
there is a way
fairly easily repurchase those stickers.
It's relatively
in
easy.
Sticker
you,
Star,
you, you
so.
Go like it's some sort of weird cavern off of the main hub town.
Yeah, it's definitely good for me to know if I ever actually go back and play that game.
I definitely want to play Sticker Star again. I'm going to wait like a year and I'm going to come back to it. I feel the same way about Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon.
All right, on to our third and final letter of this episode. It comes from Brian B. I was struck by the serendipity of the listener question posed in a recent episode as I recently reread the final issue of Nintendo Power. It prompted me in a couple more questions for Hoff. What do you miss most about your time at Nintendo Power, and among the different positions you held at the magazine, did you have a favorite and why? Well, let's see. I guess that one I'm going to have to answer. technically, I only had one or two positions on there. I was always either just editor or senior editor, but I did wear a lot of hats while I was working at NP. I was the previews editor. I was the downloads editor. I handled a lot of the content in the Power Up front of the book section. I would handle the quiz and the poll and the character profiles usually, and the 5 years, 10 years, 20 years thing, or however many years we did it, that we talked about, things that had happened in the past. So lots of that stuff. I answered letters for a time. I handled classified information for a time. Plus, I wrote reviews, wrote and tracked down features. A lot of the times I did playback. Sometimes I did power profiles. So I only, really had one job title, but that was a lot of different stuff that I did while I was at Nintendo Power. I guess if I had to pick a favorite, I don't know, I might go with the downloads editor because it let me focus on games that I think a lot of people might not pay any attention to otherwise because they were download only. So mm-hmm. You get to look at these awesome but obscure indie games and be like, hey, you should be paying attention to this. I'm sure there was a lot of crap to cut through, but when you could go through all the junk and be like, hey, here's an awesome hidden gem here on the eShop that maybe you won't know about otherwise, that was always really fun to be able to point out. And with all the virtual console stuff in the download section, I could have my fun with retro games and old school stuff, and sometimes it let me even, I put in a map feature that was like old school Nintendo Power, the entire map of Shantae. Mm-hmm. And, that had a very retro classic feel to it. So it gave me a lot of opportunities to do fun stuff like that.
Did you have an account on the eShop that let you download as many games as you wanted? Or is this something you had a credit card that you shared and you bought games you wanted to play?
You know, we did not have any special hookup with Nintendo for the eShop. Mm. So every couple weeks I would have to go out and just buy a mess of eShop points or Nintendo Wii shop or whatever it was called. I can't remember right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just had to go out and buy them, and I'd get reimbursed on a regular basis. Yeah, they did not make that easy. And that was the other thing. That was the flip side, is that sometimes, you know, they wanted to play stuff really close to the vest.
Mm-hmm.
So just, trying to hunt down great new games and talk about it in the download section could be really, really tough. Because some developers are like, oh, no, we can't talk about anything until it's already out.
Yeah.
It's like they had the fear of I don't know who put into them. And so it was just like pulling teeth sometimes. Some guys were great, and we could talk about their stuff months in advance. And a lot of times that ended up being really good games. And so for a game like Cave Story or something, we ended up talking about that, you know, several different times, because that was a pretty lengthy development process, and there was lots to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And the developer was also very open with us. But, there were some months where it was like, oh, man, what am I going to put in the download section? I don't have a lead story. What's a good game I can talk about? What's any game I can talk about?
Mm-hmm.
So it has challenges, too, but it was also a whole lot of fun. And then I guess as for just, you know, what do I miss most about my time at Nintendo Power? I feel like the community, kind of, because, you know, interacting with the fans, it was such a great and positive experience. Back at the time, we weren't allowed to have social media accounts. We couldn't do Facebook. We couldn't do Twitter. And so we weren't really allowed to interact the way that, I can interact with people, you know, just for fun now. But just being able to do it through the letters column and get the letters and answer the letters, you know, through email and through actual physical snail mail, that was always great. And it was always great to hear when people are like, oh, here's a game I never would have played if it weren't for you guys. And the fans are just so much more upbeat and enthusiastic than any other publication I'd been involved with.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that is what I miss the most, is just that, you know, sense of Nintendo community that the Nintendo Power really fostered.
Yeah.
There is one more bit in Brian B's letter, and that is where he mentions he's a little bummed about our latest contest because he doesn't have a Twitter account. And that's unfortunate, but it's a great jumping off point to remind everybody that we do have this Game Boy contest going on. Scott, do you want to give a very brief refresher?
Sure. I'm giving away a backlit, and I haven't mentioned this before, but biverted Game Boy. So
what does that mean?
So the bivert mod actually turns the black pixels dark and the dark pixels white.
Oh, weird.
And then you rotate the your brain's gonna explode. Then you rotate the polarization filter on the screen, and it makes the colors darker. Basically, the pixels are darker as a result. So you bivert the screen to invert the screen, and then you rotate the polarization filter and it reverses all that. So you wind up with the darkest version of the pixels possible. It's a biverted backlit Game Boy, and we're giving it away. It's an original Game Boy. I'm going to throw in some games with it. I'm going to have to go into my box of games or my bag of games and figure out what games I want to give, because I have a ton. Brian B was bummed because he couldn't enter because he's, for some reason, he's not allowed to have a Twitter account. Brian B, I'm going to get your email address from Chris after the show, and we'll add you to the list. So if you, for some reason, can't use Twitter, send PowerProsPod an email. That's the last resort way to enter. I wouldn't suggest it because we don't want to get spammed. But if you, for some reason, can't use Twitter, send us an email at PowerProsPod. And what is our email?
It is PowerProsPod@gmail.com.
There it is. So yeah, so Brian B, you're entered. I'll get your email address from Chris.
Yeah, and for everybody else, just go on Twitter, Be sure to put in our handle, which is at PowerProsPod. Mm-hmm. Have the hashtag Game Boy Contest. And this is going until the end of October. So as you record this, you have about a week left if you want to enter.
And I didn't say this before, and I'm going to regret saying it, but I will ship this thing internationally if you are in, I don't know, Zaire or Alaska. If you are overseas, I'm gonna swallow hard and say yes, I will ship this thing to you.
Generosity knows bounds.
So hopefully it's not gonna cost me too much, but yeah, we'll ship this thing.
Wow, awesome.
Anywhere you live, as long as the post office goes there.
Very cool. All right, I think it is time for us to take a little intermission, and then when we come back, we will discuss our big topic this week, which is our least favorite NES games. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is our least favorite NES games. I don't know if you were aware, Scott, but just last week, on October 18th, the NES celebrated its 31st birthday.
All right, 31.
Yes, and you know, we're always celebrating anniversaries here on the podcast. And, you know, any excuse for a top 10 list or something, but it's like, well, you know, 31st, what do you do? Let's do something different. Let's cover our least favorite NES games. That could be a little bit of fun anyway.
Yeah.
And besides, my NES fires are burning bright with the impending release of the NES Classic. And presumably, none of these games we talk about now are going to be on there when that thing hits on November 11th.
Except for Balloon Fight. No, Balloon Fight's
well, that's not on mine.
No, it's not on mine either.
Poor Mr. Iwata.
Hey, he made some good games too, but Balloon Fight wasn't one of them.
Well, Balloon Fight didn't make my list, but plenty of games did, so let's get right into it. The first game on my list that I want to talk about is one of my least favorites, is a game that actually performed pretty darn well in Nintendo Power. If the poll results in that magazine are to be believed, people really liked this game. Personally, I did not. And that game is the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game from Ultra on the NES.
Oh, interesting. I assumed you liked this game.
Oh, man, not at all. In fact, you know, I have found very, very few people in real life who like this game. I found a couple, but most people I know absolutely can't stand this game.
Yeah.
And there are a number of reasons for that. One of them is it's very high difficulty level.
Super high.
Yeah. It's a very, very unforgiving game. It's, you know, well known though, you know, once you get to level 3, it starts becoming super duper hard. But a lot of people get stuck at the dam. They can never get past that dam. Mm-hmm. You know, I played enough that I was able to get through the dam area fairly easily. But aside from just having a high difficulty, having these weird, tricky spots like, oh, I have this giant gap to cross, and I'm going to try, you know, there's that one spot where you just have to walk up to the gap and you automatically throw the line, you go across it. But some people try jumping, they just fall into a pit and die. There's that one infamous part where there's this little gap and it's close to the ceiling. If you try to jump, you fall every stinking time. You're supposed to walk over the gap.
It's known as impossible, isn't it?
I think that part's impossible to actually jump. You just have to walk over it, and that's how you clear that part. But aside from that, I just felt like it wasn't very Ninja Turtle-y. It didn't seem very much like Ninja Turtles at all. The characters, other than the turtles themselves, didn't look much like the characters I was familiar with. Maybe that's because it was based more on the comic book than the cartoon. Yeah. But, you know, then again, I guess Bebop and Rocksteady weren't from the comic book. They were from the cartoon and toy line. Mm-hmm. So who knows? But at any rate, that was just one of those games that I found super frustrating. And I'm like, man, why would anyone be playing this? Why is it so high in these rankings? Unless it's just because it has this license attached to it.
Yeah, I feel like it would have been a better game if it were a little easier.
Well, yeah. If it had like a save system or something, yeah, so you could go back to it, I think that would have helped things a lot. But you only had a couple of continues, and then that was it. Back to the first level. You have to go through that stupid dam level again.
Yeah, the water levels were really hard. The water level where there's a timer before you, for some reason, turtles can't stay underwater.
The bombs go off.
The bombs go off.
That's
right.
The bombs
explode. That's what the timer's
for. You have to defuse these bombs like in 2 minutes. Yep. So, but that part wasn't that bad for me. I was able to get through there, fairly easily. But then once level 3 hit, things just got really nasty, and I was no longer. I mean, I wasn't really even enjoying it. I just didn't really care for the play mechanics that were in the game, even in the earlier levels. But once that really high difficulty kicked in on level 3, no thanks. So did you like this one? I'm having a little trouble telling.
I liked it because I was such a fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I enjoyed it. You could play as each of the four turtles. Obviously, Donatello was the only one worth playing as.
Well, he was the strongest. He was the strongest. But, that bow staff was a little hard to use. Yeah.
I enjoyed it, and I played it a lot, but never finished it, and it remained pretty inscrutable. Like the above ground maze where the Technodrome was, it was a changing target, so you couldn't just go back to the Technodrome even after you finished all levels. It was still up in the air where the Technodrome. I think that was the case, but it was a hard game. It was just hard, and for no good reason.
Yeah, it was definitely frustrating. Definitely difficult. Mm-hmm. So what is one of the ones on your list? What is one of your least favorites?
Okay, so I really don't like Urban Champion. It's one of the original Black Box
Urban
games.
Champion.
It's notorious for being not a good game. It's like a fighting game where
it's basically a one-on-one fighting game.
It's the most basic of one-on-one fighting games. You can block high, block low, punch high, punch low. That's the whole that's the whole thing. And it is a two-player game.
Yeah.
The one-player version, it becomes insanely easy. The only thing you have to watch out for is like flower pots falling on your head, but for the most part it's pretty much. And it's infinite. You there's no end game with this game.
Yeah, it goes
so if you
on forever
get
and ever.
Good at it, you will just. It's just the slowest fighting game you'll ever play. So I got this because my mom went out and bought it for me without knowing what it was. She saw it at the store, knew I had a Nintendo system, and I didn't have very many games. So this was a real treat, and I was very excited to have it. And
oh, man.
It was so bad. I knew it was bad. You know, when you were a kid and you thought, they don't make bad games. This was a bad game.
A little hard to
this
tell.
Was a bad game. It was easy to tell. Urban Champion is a crappy game. And for some reason, they remade it for the 3DS in 3D. What a waste of time. I feel awful for whoever had to actually port that over to the 3DS and make it 3D. Because what a terrible game.
Yeah, Nintendo only did like 6 of those 3D classics ports, and one of them was Urban Champion. Man, I mean, what a waste of space was.
It's a kids go out, just play it, just to see what I'm talking about. It is one of my least favorite NES games. It's surprising how bad it is. It's surprising because there are so many other good black box games like Pinball, even Wrecking Crew. I love Wrecking Crew. I loved Ice Climber. But gosh, that freaking game, there's no redeeming qualities in that.
Well, there is one redeeming quality, I will say, and that is the fact that, after you punch your opponent enough or he punches you enough, the loser falls in a sewer hole.
That's right.
And then you do a hilarious, goofy dance while confetti falls
on
your head.
There's like an olive oil above you that's throwing confetti down. It's so weird.
And the fact that that happens at all is hilarious. But other than that, the game pretty much has no redeeming quality.
Yeah, why are these two guys in the middle of the street fighting each other? It's terrible.
I love the fact that one in the background just says snack bar. I find that hilarious as well. That game is actually did not make my list, okay. But I agree. Yeah. Not a good
Bad game.
Unsurprisingly, my list continues to be populated with licensed games. There were a lot of bad ones on the NES. So the next one I've got is X-Men, which I believe came from LJN. And it was a top-down action game, top-down co-op.
Yeah, it looks like the top-down parts of Blaster Master.
Only way worse looking, way the graphics. Worse. The graphics are abysmal.
Yeah.
But the thing that really gets me about the game, and I haven't played this game in ages, so you know I've forgotten a lot of the details, but it's always a two-player game. And so if you're playing solo, your partner is controlled by the computer. But it has like the worst AI of all time. So what inevitably happens is the second mutant is controlled by the computer. It just walks around in some weird random pattern, steps on a damage zone, and explodes like within 10 seconds of you firing up the game. Ugly graphics, bad AI. I remember having some weird issues with the powers you had as well. Like, I'm pretty sure that Wolverine's power actually drained his life when he's the mutant with the healing factor. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, not good.
Ooh.
Not good.
Is that
all.
Is that an LJN game? I mean,
yes,
I don't want to poop on one company, but didn't they also make the Turtles game?
No.
Oh,
Konami did the Turtles
game.
Oh,
gosh, you're right. Oh, my gosh, it's Konami.
Yeah. You remember them, right?
Gosh.
They used to make video
that's
games.
Yeah, right. They did.
But yeah, LJN did X-Men, did lots of crappy licensed games. They also did the next one on my list, which is Friday the 13th.
Oh, all right. Yeah, tell me why you hate it, because there's actually a lot of nostalgic love for this game. So
really? Yeah. I haven't heard any. I hear almost nothing but universal hatred of this game. And for many people, believing it is the worst NES game of all.
Wow.
And I have not played every game, so I can't say it is the worst game, but it is definitely one of my least favorites. I don't hate it as much now as I did back then, because when it first came out, I didn't understand it at all. I didn't know what was going on. It just felt like you walk around, Jason shows up and he kills you, and that's all there is to the game. When, I look into it more, you find out, oh, there's actually a little bit of Metroidiness going on. You have to go to certain places to get certain items and do that in a certain order, and that lets you, defeat Jason once and for all. But the problem is, imagine you're playing a Metroid type of game, but then every 45 seconds you hear an alert and you have to go back to some previous area because the Metroids are killing all of your friends and family. And so you can never make any progress because heading back there is A, nearly impossible, and B, if you do get back there, you're probably going to get killed. So just this whole sense of, not being able to easily change characters, having to rush back from whatever you're doing, and then the whole unclear goals, maze-like nature of the game, it all conspires to be a horrible, miserable experience. Once you figure out and know what you need to do, it becomes a little bit better, but it still doesn't change the fact that you just can't progress because of the way the game is structured.
Yeah. This game has its interesting fame for coloring Jason purple. And then NECA, the company that makes like the Contra toy that you just were talking about, they made a version of Jason that's purple based with the box that looks like the box art from this game. So
yes, I have that.
And you have it. Even though you hate this game, you bought that toy.
I'd say, I said it's one of my least favorites. Okay. There is a difference. But yes, I mean, I have a sort of a fondness for it in some way because it is a hilarious game and it's hilariously awful. Mm-hmm. And I also owned it as a kid.
Yeah.
So I blame my brother for that, by the way. He was a huge horror movie fan. So he's the one who talked me into
that. So unfortunately, people can't go back and experience this on Virtual Console. How best?
No.
Oh, gosh. You're going to have to go buy an...
The best way to experience is to not experience it at all. So
I'll give you this. Why don't you
buy the action figure instead? That's a lot more fun than playing the game.
Honestly, I think YouTube is a good way to just see what these games were like. If you get on YouTube, look for this game, Friday the 13th NES, you'll see what Chris is talking about. It's pretty silly. It's a pretty silly game.
So what's next on your
list? So I'm not going to talk about my most despised game, and I don't want to say hate, but
you're not.
Bart versus the Space Mutants was such
another licensed game.
Yeah, another licensed game. I believe that was LJN.
It was Acclaim.
Oh, Acclaim. All right, they're just as guilty.
But Acclaim bought LJN at one point, so they are both equally guilty. I don't remember if that one was under the Acclaim or the LJN banner, or who owned the rights first. I want to say that one was an Acclaim.
So this game came out at what was the Simpsons came and it just changed the world, and then they made a video game based on it.
Yeah, this was the first.
This was the first Simpsons game. So. Mm-hmm. How could I not buy it? I was such a Simpsons fan and thinking, how could this game not be good because it's the Simpsons? How could they mess it up?
Well, it's from Acclaim. That's how.
It is so weird and bizarre. It's Bart versus the Space Mutants, and it's just... I appreciate that they were like, well, we can't just have Bart going around Springfield, you know, I don't know.
It could have just been a Mario clone or something.
It could have been. It should have been.
And that probably would have been better.
But instead, it's this collect questy thing where you're trying to basically hide things that the Space Mutants are collecting to power up their powers. And so the first level is you need to hide the purple things. And there's a lot of like high up purple things that you wouldn't be able to get to, but you have to fire off like a rocket to make the bird fly away because the bird's purple. So you're hiding all the purple things or collecting the purple things. And the second level, it's like hats and you have to collect all the hats.
But it was confusing. It wasn't really clear what you were supposed to
do. They kind of explained it a little, but
they probably tried too much.
It's a little more complicated than it should have been. And
yes,
the controls
were terrible.
So bad.
It was so sloppy.
The jumping and the run, and it's a platformer with the worst controls ever. So
yes, yeah, so slippery.
All it's got going for it is the name Simpsons and the introduction screen with the family sitting on the couch. Everything else after that is just a disaster. But
yeah, I mean, I do agree. I'm glad they tried to do something a little bit innovative, but they were not able to pull it off. It was much better on paper than it turned out in the final game.
The Simpsons arcade game is one of my favorite games of all time. And
oh, yeah. I love the Simpsons arcade. I mean, I own the actual arcade machine.
Yeah.
For
so, I mean, if we even got a small taste of that, that would have been enough for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But see, they just kept it simple. That was this obscure company called Konami. Mm-hmm. They made a Simpsons game, but they kept it simple. Just a straightforward beat 'em up, you know, nothing that was really particularly innovative about, but they still managed to make it really, really super fun.
Yeah, and it stayed true to the characters. And this Simpsons game, this Bart versus the Space Mutants, all you've got is Bart, and maybe it's Principal Skinner at the end of one of the levels that's a boss, but it could be him, but it might not be. It's just not good. It's not good.
I'd say it was pretty hard, too.
It was really hard. So the only way I've ever seen it finished is on YouTube.
Well, speaking of bad games featuring creatures from space, the next one I would tell people to stay far away from is Predator.
Oh, Predator. Tell me about this game, because I didn't ever play this game, but this is also one of those weird... NECA made a toy for this, too, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. They did. Yeah, unfortunately, it was not a pink Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, appears in the game. I think it was just some, bluish-colored Predator.
Okay.
But yes, I do have this whole collection of bad licensed game action figures. Friday the 13th, Predator, Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, I got quite a collection of them from Nika. But again, this was, it should have been a fun, awesome action game. Because, you know, it's Predator. You're Arnold Schwarzenegger. You're going through the jungle. But, again... It's just a really sloppy, slippery platformer. The controls aren't up to the task. You know, when you do get it has these scenes with these really big character sprites where you fight the Predator, but you're automatically running, and it's really hard to control, and it's really awkward. But to sum it all up, in the game's, you know, perhaps one biggest flaw, if you pause the game and you hit the A or B buttons, you explode.
Why?
I don't No. Presumably, there's some way in the game you'd end up getting stuck or something, and you can't proceed any further unless you make your character die, which means either the levels are really poorly designed, or it means there is no reason to have your character explode when you hit the button while it's paused, and it's just a way to irritate you to no end, because, you know, if you pause the game and come back to it, there is a chance you might accidentally hit the A or B button and cause that to happen. I mean, you think it would be like, you know, hit up and A and B all together so you don't do it by accident or something. But yeah, the fact that there is a built-in make your character explode button, I think, says a lot about how crappy this sloppy, poor excuse for an Arnold Schwarzenegger game is.
It's just looking at it, it looks like they had everything that's in Contra except for play control and level design.
Well, it doesn't have the speed. It doesn't have that kind of action. It doesn't hold up a candle to Contra, man.
It just looks boring. What were they thinking? Who made this game? Let's shame them.
Well, it was published by Activision. I don't know who the developer was, but Activision was the publisher.
Well, they went down and then they went up.
What else do you have?
Okay. Now this, I'm just bringing out the big guns here, because this is, by God, it's got to be by far the worst NES game ever made. Back to the Future. It is Back to the Future.
Another LJN game, another licensed game. I have not played this one, so tell me about it.
It's so shockingly garbage that it feels wrong to call it garbage, because that's giving garbage a bad name. This game is so bad. The music, the graphics, the fact that it's it's got nothing to do with Back to the Future. They're like, okay, well, Back to the Future. Okay, Marty on a skateboard. Okay, we got Paperboy. We can do Marty on a skateboard with Paperboy instead of collecting.
Is he actually throwing papers?
He's not throwing papers. He's not throwing anything. He's jumping to avoid obstacles, and he's collecting clocks for some reason, because time. Because time is important. And then it's like four of the worst mini games ever pasted together, and that's Back to the Future. And the other mini games are makes me mad. It just makes me mad talking about it. The other mini games are like somebody's on one end of a classroom throwing hearts, and you have to collect the hearts. So you have to run as she's running and throwing hearts at you. You're collecting hearts, and I'm guessing this is your mom in the science class. Yeah. Bizarre. And then there's like a part with bullies, and you have to like, you're behind a counter at the diner and you're throwing things as bullies are coming at the counter. So it's almost like Tapper, but worse, root beer Tapper or beer Tapper, whatever.
Is there ever a part where you get to cover somebody in manure?
No, there is not. There is not.
Wow.
And
what a missed
there's,
opportunity.
And then at the end, you're driving your DeLorean and you're avoiding lightning and you're trying to get the speedometer to go up to 60 or 88 miles per hour, but you're avoiding lightning, which is the exact opposite of the plot of the film. So this game is, and the music, oh my goodness, you're better off playing it with the sound off, because the music is just the worst music. So there's that. So yeah. Don't play this game. Don't go buy a Nintendo and try to play this game. And I pray it never gets to Virtual Console, because it is just so bad. LJN was the king back in the day of getting really good licenses and making really crap games, because they would still get that Nintendo seal of quality. Parents would still buy it. Kids would still want it, because it's connected to this thing that's wonderful and lovely and people loved. And man, those were bad games. I'm going to have to go back and find a good LJN game or a good Acclaim game, but it's going to be hard.
There are good Acclaim games. Wizards and Warriors, but we're not here to talk about that.
That is a great game, actually. Wizards and Warriors is a wonderful game.
It was by Rare, so that's probably one of the reasons for that. It seems like Back to the Future, when you think about it, would be really hard to translate into a good video game anyway. But put it in the hands of LJN, it's like, yeesh. The next one on my list, it's actually not a licensed game. It is not an LJN game. It is from our friends over at Konami. And I've talked about this game on the podcast before. It's The Adventures of Bayou Billy.
Oh, yeah. Which is part light gun, part platformer.
Well, part beat 'em up.
Part beat 'em.
Part okay, light gun
part
game.
Beat 'em up. That's right.
And part driving game. And I don't want to, you know, bemoan this too much because I know I have said this stuff before, but on paper, it sounds like the greatest thing ever made because Konami was, you know, amazing back in the NES days. So it's like, oh, it's Konami's take on a beat 'em up plus light gun plus driving. This should be phenomenal. And in some ways, it actually is really good. The soundtrack, I love. The sound effects are really good. The graphics look great. And the zapper stages aren't really too bad either, but the side-scrolling beat-em-up stuff is just, it's just really awful. And, you know, it's almost unplayable because the way you know, you just hit an enemy and they just hit you right back. It's like they don't react. The AI is, you know, super, super dumb. And just the fact that it's really hard to, you know, brawl with an enemy just, you know, sucks all the fun out of it. And so while in a lot of ways it's, you know, probably leaps ahead of some games on the NES, it was a huge disappointment for me because I, you know, had such high expectations for it. And it just, you know, totally floundered and left me completely empty. So for that reason, it's one of my least favorites in many regards.
I had the good fortune of seeing you play this game in my presence, and I was shocked how many hits it took to take down some of those enemies. It's just it's senseless. Why should it take 10 hits to take down an enemy? That's just pointless.
That's what it takes, by the way. It is 10. You are correct.
Miserable. Yep.
Did you have any other games you wanted to?
I did.
To put on
I
want to
bemoan
shame?
Another game. It's probably Acclaim or LJN. Dragon's Lair. They put Dragon's Lair on the NES.
No, that is not Acclaim. That is not LJN.
Whoever it was, they should be ashamed. It's bad.
But, you know, everyone knows Dragon's Lair. It was the old Laserdisc game. It was basically like an interactive cartoon. And, you know, it was kind of mind-blowing when you saw this thing back in the arcade in the day. But that's not what we got on the NES. And so I never played it, but tell me what we did
get.
What
we got was something like, let's make it like Prince of Persia, but terrible. I almost said a really bad word. It's so bad. Knowing what Dragon's Lair is supposed to be, and you think, oh, well, maybe they got it part right. It's just awful. It's hard to explain. It's nearly impossible to get past the first few screens because it's just stupid. The first screen is you're crossing the drawbridge to get into the castle, and you'll die 100 times before you make it. And when you finally make it, you get to the next area, which is just this awful platforming experience. It's just bad. It's bad. I might have played this for an hour total in my whole life, and that's more than enough. I never owned this game. I have played it, and it's just... Yeah, it's bad.
I'll take your word for it. Sony ImageSoft was the publisher on that one, by the way.
What makes it so bad is that it's based on this Laserdisc game that was very simple. You know, your sword flashes, hit the sword button. The tile to the left flashes, move to the left. There's a dragon on the right that's going to breathe fire, move to the left. So it was very much, you know, a thing flashes on the screen, press your joystick in that direction. And if we got something even close to that for the NES, it would have been fine. But they couldn't do that. It's obviously the NES didn't have a disc drive. So we wound up with one of the worst games ever made. So, yeah.
You know, there actually was a Game Boy Color port, I believe, and it followed the arcade formula. It actually had all that stuff in the form of the arcade game, you know, with basically, you know, full motion video on your Game Boy Color. I'm not going to say it was a great game, but it actually did manage to capture the feel of the arcade game pretty well. So
that
was
awesome.
Kind of crazy.
I'm shocked.
You should hunt that one down. It's probably far, far ahead of the NES one.
I think mainly I hate it because it's so hard. For it to look so good and sound so good and be so bad is just depressing.
It doesn't sound fun.
Another game that's very hard, and I own this game, and I want to say, in hindsight, it's just so bad. Top Gun. Have you ever played Top Gun?
Top Gun. Yeah. I have played Top Gun. I didn't own that one, but I actually kind of liked that one back in the day.
I liked it too, but there's the landing sequence. It's the landing sequence. And, you know, it's funny you're laughing about it, but it bedevils you.
That was definitely the hardest part.
It's not hard because it's challenging. It's hard because it's inscrutable. It's not, there's no easy way to land your plane properly. You can follow all the prompts and you're still going to crash into the ocean or fall short. It's just really frustrating. So for them to put that part in the game when it was a really good, fun, airplane fighting game, It's just a shame for something that silly to ruin the game where I'm going to automatically lose a life. It'll let me go to the next level, but I'm going to lose a life because one, I can't land the plane, and two, I can't refuel the plane. Refueling the plane is almost as frustrating and impossible as landing the plane. So for these two reasons, it's just one of my least liked games. It's too nerve-wracking and it's inscrutable. It's not easy, it's not hard, it's just arbitrarily,
it was kind of hard. That part was hard.
Makes a good game bad, which is why I put on my list.
So my friends had it, so I did play it a bunch, but yeah, you're totally right. It's like, okay, well, I'm definitely losing a life mandatory after the first level.
So frustrating.
You can't land that plane.
Refueling halfway through the level, you run out of gas and you have to refuel, and docking with the refueling plane is almost as difficult as landing the thing, which is just arbitrarily just stupid. It's stupid. I understand them wanting to make it like a simulator, but you're not going to make a simulator with an NES game.
It's an arcade action game.
It's just, it's a shame because it is such a fun game otherwise.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's one of my least favorites, but I totally know what you're talking about. So I can understand it. This last thing that I want to mention, you know, it's not actually a game. So does it really belong on our list of the least favorite NES games? I think it kind of does, because any NES game you use it with automatically becomes worse. And I'm talking about the one, the only, the legendary Mattel Power Glove.
I never owned one. Did you own one of these things?
I did not. I did not own one. In fact, I'm not even sure how I got my hand on one, because I certainly never would have bought it. I guess I must have had some friends that had it and I borrowed it from or something, but I don't know which of my friends would have been crazy enough to buy it. But yeah, if you grew up with the NES back in the day, you know this thing is legendary because it was hyped pretty heavily. It got commercials on TV, and of course there's that famous scene in The Wizard with the kid playing with the power glove and, you know, the unforgettable line, "It's so bad." And it really, really is. It's so bad as in it's terrible. It's awful.
Yeah.
It is the pits. Because you put this thing on, and the idea is you move your hand, you use it to move the character, and then you flex your hand to create actions like shooting or jumping or something, except it really doesn't work at all, and it makes everything way, way worse and way harder to play.
Yeah.
And, there were exclusive games for it, or games that were, supposed to be made for it, like Super Glove Ball and Bad Street Brawler. Did I play those? I don't even remember. But, they would show people playing Punch-Out and be like, oh, yeah, you punch your hand and, Mac punches in the game. No, it doesn't work that way at all. In fact, it hardly works, period. It was just so awful. And it had, you had to program it for each game and things like that.
Yep. Is that what that huge D-pad number pad is on the arm part? What is that keyboardy part? Is that the programming part of the thing?
Yeah, there's these 10 numbers on there, and each game had its own different code. So, you could supposedly then control the game in some halfway decent manner. You want to play Punch-Out, you type in one code. If you want to play Top Gun, you enter some other code. So every game had a different code for the most part.
So was it bending each finger actually performed a function, and then you could twist your wrist and that also did a thing? Is that how it worked?
I really don't remember, because in practice, none of it actually worked.
Oh, man.
And, you know, you think about it, and it's like, well, you know, the Wii came out, 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's like, well, that was everything that the Power Glove promised, you know, back in 1989 or whatever. You know, you motion control, you swing your fist and you attack. And so it took them, you know, more than 15 years to get the technology to a point where it was actually functional. And even then with Wii, you know, it had a lot of issues. It'll have you just be flailing around and it wouldn't really recognize you properly.
Yeah.
But, oh man, the Power Glove, it is a great way to make every game you have feel just like a miserable, unplayable mess.
Ugh. So outside of, you said Bad Street Brawler was made for the Power Glove. I didn't realize that. And the other
game was
like a handball game.
Yeah, Super Glove Ball.
Super Glove Ball. Was there anything else that was, and who made, was it Acclaim that made this thing?
No, it was Mattel.
Oh, it was Mattel.
Did the Power Glove. And of course, the two, Power Glove themed games were also published by them, I believe.
Yeah.
But for a real great look at the Power Glove, you can go on YouTube and look at some videos. Game Players did a videotape, a Game Players game tape, all about the Power Glove, where they tell you, you know, how it does all these wonderful things. And, you know, there's some, you know, cool dude who comes on there and he talks to this little kid and he's like, "I'm a glove master. You looked at the future, kid. Let me tell you all about it." And it's kind of hilarious. As a bonus feature, in the middle of this video, you will get to see a clip of my former co-host and former Nintendo Power editor-in-chief Chris Slate going into the Game Player's fabulous testing room.
That's awesome.
And sitting down to tell you all about the
Power Glove. Gosh, that's so cool.
It's just too bad he was not the glove master from the future.
Wow.
But I consider that, despite not being a game, a honorable mention in the worst NES games of all time, just because it is, as they promise, so bad. I think that wraps up our big topic for this week, and that brings this episode pretty much to a close. But before we go, I believe there is still time for a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the Super NES game, Schuljager. There's never been a game like this before. Schuljager combines a high-powered action game with a clue-filled story to create the biggest 16-bit experience ever. The game. Get ready for the eye-popping graphics and innovative gameplay of 21 main maps and over 50 hidden maps. It's all-out war as you fight savage, kiltish troops, battle wild Westican bladebacks, explore the ancient lost city of Urnum, and bring the merciless Captain Schuljager to his knees. The book, the 80-page book, crammed with amazing illustrations, tells the saga of a Westican rebel named Storm Jackson and his battle to free his island nation from the cruel rule of Captain Schuljager.
Is it really? Is there an 80-page book that came with this thing?
When Storm steals Schuljager's sword, he sparks a massive revolution against the captain's fearsome, kiltish army. And if you think Schuljager's going to take this revolution lying down, then maybe you've forgotten how hacked off a maniacal, kiltish despot he can get. The book's also jam-packed with hidden clues. If you can figure them out, they'll help you find tons of hidden secret things in the game. Groundbreaking. Challenging. Awesome. Schuljager has everything you're looking for in a game.
I didn't even know this game existed.
I kind of forgot about this game. I've never played it. It actually looks kind of cool. It actually sounds kind of cool, except for the fact that I can't really pronounce the name Schuljager. Jaeger, Jager, Schuljager? I don't know. It's not even a real German word. Like, It sounds like it might mean like Skull Hunter or something, but it doesn't actually mean anything.
Revolt of the Westicans.
Yes, that is the full title.
With an 80-page booklet, if you weren't aware, yep. 80 pages, and they reiterate it on the back of the box. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah, actually reading about this makes me kind of want to try to track it down and play it, but it certainly sounds bizarre.
Before we wrap up, I want to mention there is a good Back to the Future game, and it never came to North America, and it's on the Super Famicom. It has good music. It's actually true to the plot. The graphics are great. Why didn't we get this game? We'll never know, but yes, there is a good Back to the Future game out there. Unfortunately, only in Japan.
All right, well, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Scott at PlasticBugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com for any reason, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella,
School Yager,
and our friendly hammer-wielding monarch, King Dedede, we will see you next time.